Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
It's Dr. Tumi with The Gifted and Wakwabidwa, Wakwabudwa. Such a difficult word. 1 Kings 17 verse 3 to 4 is our scripture for today. Go to the east and hide by Kerith Brook, near where it enters the Jordan River. Drink from the brook and eat what the ravens bring you, for I have commanded them to bring you food. Where is your place of protection and provision? That's what I'm talking about this afternoon. In the book of 1 Kings, we observe how Elijah finds himself in a difficult situation after confronting King Ahab. The Lord knew that Elijah would need protection and provision and had designed a way out for him. He instructed the prophet to go to the brook of Kerith, where he would find safety and provision. Elijah chose to obey the Lord's instruction, and therefore, he received everything he needed during that season in his life. However, this is not always how things unfold for us. I believe that often we go through unnecessary difficulties simply because we fail to follow the guidance of the Lord in certain situations. If we took the time to seek his face and follow his will for our lives, we could avoid many of the hardships that come our way. Sure, this was certainly true in my own experience. Years ago, after becoming Christian in England, I returned to Spain, my homeland. However, during that time, the writer says, it felt as if every door was shutting around me, and the only bright spot in my life was the church that I was attending. During that period, I faced significant challenges, which made life quite difficult. It felt as if there was no future for me in Spain. But after some time, I finally realized that the reason for my struggle was simply being in the wrong place at that stage of my life. As a result, I found myself without the support and resources that the Lord had intended for me. Once I understood that I needed to return to England, I took action, and after my arrival in the country, everything began to change, he says. The Lord started to open doors for me, one step at a time. God is good, and he knows the plans that he has for each of us. In his plan for me, he included the healing ministry, which I first experienced personally before stepping into service to help others in the area. This would not have been possible in Spain. And as such, training was very scarce at that time. He says, in England, I also had the joy of meeting my English husband, and together, we've been dedicating our lives to serving the Lord for many years. I'm going to leave it there for now. How many times do we get misplaced because we want things done how we want them to be done? And as a result of that, we mess things up and we go back and we cry to God. I've experienced a similar experience recently in my life where I said, you know what, Lord, I don't know if I ever actively listened in this regard. It happens. It happens. And the most beautiful thing we can do is to pick ourselves up and continue walking again, trusting and believing that the Lord is
one. Welcome back. Welcome back. My name is Given Illustrative, and I am joined by Anka and Eldred, both of whom work in the space of addiction with young people, not just within South Africa, but they actually work around the world with many important people, inviting them to come and address this very, very serious issue. Now, I cannot state how big of an issue this is in South Africa. I think sometimes it's because we always think of South Africa as a place with very bad internet that is also very expensive. So we tend to assume that this problem should only be occurring in those countries that have affordable internet, which, if I am honest, I was naive enough to believe exactly this. But both Anka and Eldred are going to shed some light for us, and also not just help us as young people understand how we can regain power. I know that, Eldred, one thing you love to emphasize on is the issue of identity, which I'm really looking forward to hearing you getting more into depth with that and how it can help. But also going to be addressing you as the parent. How can you learn and study this world that young people are living in? And this is basically a discussion around digital addiction in general. But we will be zooming into some few things. So, Anka, how are you doing?
Even good day, and good day to all the listeners. I'm doing well, thank you. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share myself and Eldred, our heart and our passion and our calling. And I really look forward to have this conversation with you.
Awesome, awesome. So am I. So I'm just going to give you just a few minutes to introduce the work that you do. What exactly is your profession?
Thank you, Given. So by the grace of God, I had the opportunity to study. So yes, I love to study. I've done my PhD in theology, specifically focusing on internet addiction disorder, and started my studies first in 2009 and continued my studies until now, doing a second degree now in 2023. And the main reason for that is because technology has advanced so much that in 2009 and doing my degree, getting my degree in 2012, everything regarding digital addiction was just a hypothesis. Mm. So the psychology, the science, the medicine, everybody saw that something is happening, and they could see the changes in children, could see the suicidal tendencies and the depression and the aggression, but no one could really prove for a fact that screens and screen time and gaming and excessive gaming can have such an adverse effect on everybody, not just teenagers. Mm. And then now in the 2021, 2022, 2023, everything with regards to digital addiction is proven. We can see literally on a brain scan what is pornography and social media and gaming doing on the brain. With the psychology, we can see now what they are doing on a psychological level, how it's influencing their character, their behavior, their identity. And then obviously what I love most is we could see on a spiritual level what it is doing to the spirit world and to their belief and to their religion. So yes, I like to study a lot, I like to read a lot, and then mainly I also work in schools doing one-on-one counseling with children with regards to pornography addiction, with screen time addiction, suicidal tendencies, cutting, self-harming that is originated out of excessive screen time. And myself and Eldred, like you've mentioned, we also travel a lot where we speak to parents, we speak in schools, in churches, youth meetings. So yes, we basically have dedicated our life to this calling.
Mm, and we're very, very grateful for the work that you guys do. I think it's so important. I think even for a country that's not as digitally addicted as South Africa is, I think the work that you guys do is still important for those countries, because it's always better to prevent the problem before it even gets bad. Now, Eldred, you have a very, very inspiring and encouraging testimony with your background in gaming. Can you share a bit about that? Because I feel like a lot of young people right now are at the place where you were a while ago, or for even those who aren't even at a place where they'd consider themselves addicted. Can you share some of the dangers that you understand about that world of gaming?
Yes, good afternoon, listeners. Like even mentioned, I was actually addicted to games for about 20 years. Started when I was about 16 years old. You obviously start thinking that it's going to be a hobby, you know, and you start off with a hobby, obviously, an innocent hobby, if I can call it that. And obviously, as it progresses, it gets worse and worse. And then it went an evolution, basically, that I can say, into a full-on addiction. So from my side, you know, I've gone through 20 years of addiction, so I really understand the mechanics. I understand the spiritual side of it. Like Anka was mentioning, obviously many years ago, when gaming was still in the infancy stage, you know, we knew it was a problem, obviously, with games, but we never had the scientific backing to understand what was happening. And similarly to me, at that point in time, I knew there was something wrong. I knew there was an addiction, but I didn't really understand how it worked. And I think that's the main problem with any kind of addiction is, you know, especially with myself, I'm a very analytical person, so I was one of those little boys that used to get like a radio-controlled car, and the next day it will be, you know, completely taken apart because I wanted to know how is this car, you know, going around the room.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm a problem solver, and that's what I do. So I wanted to figure out, okay, so what is the mechanics? Why did I do what I did? Why? What caused my addiction? What caused the destruction in my life and also the people around me, to understand the full effect of it. Because as I always tell the people, you know, when you're inside the bubble, you don't really see the damage that you're doing to yourself and the people around you. And that's the main focus of addiction. What people don't realize, and in a family when you have an addict, it's, I would even go as far as to say that the addict is not the worst affected. The family is affected worse than the addict. And that's the main thing is, you know, the people around you that love you, that care about you, and obviously they want to help you, and seeing you go into complete destruction, annihilation, I can't think of anything worse, you know, and leaving those people in the wake of destruction, obviously just seeking your self-worth and self-gratification and just focusing on yourself. So I think for me, the dangers would be obviously, if someone had to tell me these things that I'm privy to tell the people today about 20 or 25 years old or years ago, I wouldn't have done what I did. And like you were mentioning also, it is always better to be preventative than curative and to be vigilant. And if we can provide the people with the information now before it develops into a full gone addiction, then at least we can make a difference.
Yeah. Now that's a very, very interesting stuff that you've said there. It's a bit heavy, and I think a bit of a hard pill to swallow for those who are dealing with addiction. The fact that addiction actually affects the people around you. And this is something that we often don't think about and consider when we pick up things that might send us down the path of addiction. I'm very curious, Anka, in terms of just what you've seen and the spaces you've been at and the people you've worked with, of all this digital media, what would you say is the one thing you've seen has people most addicted? Is it social media? Is it YouTube? Is it video content? Or have you seen that gaming is one of the most addictive? And because I ask that because I know that gaming is not something that's as easily accessible as all these other digital spaces, because it's still quite expensive to even own a device that can play these heavy games. And obviously, Eldred, you can correct me on that if maybe I'm saying it wrong. But Anka, what of these digital platforms would you say is one of the most addictive?
Even so, I think maybe myself and Eldred, we had this conversation before. So Eldred would obviously say gaming addiction, and yes, gaming addiction is a massive problem, but I think it's different for boys and girls, and I think it's different also for age groups. So you must remember, and I don't think a lot of people understand this or know this, but South Africa is the most internet addicted country in the world. We use the most data in the world. So we have a massive, massive problem with regards to that. So what I have seen in the counseling room specifically is that I see with with girls and teenage girls, social media is the biggest problem with them. With also, I do see a lot of depression, anxiety, self-loathing, self-hate, really a very bad self-worth, bad self-image, where to the point they are self-harming and also, you know, contemplating suicide. I also see where their grades is dropping. They are really in a bad space mentally with regards to a social media addiction. I do see with teenagers, the boys, pornography, a massive problem. So for me personally, I think the biggest problem is pornography. I think the harms and the dangers with regards to porn is massive. And then with regards to the younger generation, like the primary school, I think gaming is huge. A lot of them are gaming and they are gaming a lot. So according to research that we can say now with safety and with surety that the average teenager is on their screen roughly about 9 hours a day, and then gaming is roughly about 4 to 5 hours a day, and that's too much. It's really, really too much screen time, even if it's good content, like you've mentioned, YouTube and videos. Even if it's good content, good videos, it's not about the content, although better content is always better, but it is the time in front of the screen that is doing the damage. So the damage to the brain, the damage to your eyes, your posture, everything. It's really, there's not a lot of good things that I can say about excessive screen time.
Yeah. No, I completely understand what you mean. I mean, even I myself have noticed, I've had, like, just to put discipline on myself, I have certain apps that I install on my phone to sort of restrict this, you know, even if it's not an addiction, but the habit in itself of just constantly picking up your phone and trying to get into an app and check something quickly. Next thing you know, you're watching your 50th video. So, yeah, exactly. So I try to restrict the extent to which I do that. Now, Eldred, I wanted you to speak a bit on how accessible is gaming in South Africa. Now, I know that now gaming on mobile has become such a big thing, and a lot of these companies that are developing games are starting to move their games onto mobile. But is it actually something that's accessible to the South African youth?
Yes, I think it's a very good point that you're raising there. I think a lot of people are of the opinion that when you think about a gamer, you're thinking about a 12, 13, 14, maybe 15-year-old sitting in front of an Xbox or a PlayStation playing games. That is not the situation at the moment. You know, if I can just tell you about some of the statistics, about 50% of all games are being played on a mobile phone. So if you look at, yes, the distribution is basically 50% on mobile phones, and then console games is 30%. Browser PC games, it's about 15%, and about 20% is on downloadable PC games. So if you think about a distribution, then you're looking at 30% console games. That is per definition what you think of a gamer. That will be your PlayStation, Xboxes. But 50% is mobile games. So what is happening here? You need to understand that if you have a product that you really want to sell and you want to control the market, it is really about the accessibility to this product. So, and that's why they moved over from console games to mobile platform. Because the thing is, you need to understand, people don't really understand the phones that they're holding in their hand. It has a CPU, a processing unit, similar to a computer, a PC.
Yes.
So you're basically carrying a PC in your pocket. So with the processing power that you have there, you're carrying a PC in your pocket, which basically means that you're carrying a PC or a device that can play any kind of game at any point in time. So it's extremely accessible. And this is what they did with, for example, Call of Duty. They're also doing it now with Fortnite. Fortnite used to be a console game, but it moved over now to mobile.
Yes.
So now what you're doing with the kids is they're playing the game maybe at night, and then they can continue the same game, playing the same game maybe during, you know, break time at school. So now what you're doing is you're actually creating more accessibility to that addictive product, and then obviously bringing in more kind of addictive strategies into the gaming, like, for example, your in-game purchases, microtransactions, you know, because while you're playing the game, your inhibition control is very low. So now when you're playing the game, obviously you want to buy certain things. You don't think twice. You buy it there. So now what they're actually doing is they're making the product very addictive, very accessible.
Yeah.
But not only that, they're also monetizing the addiction the best. So that is why we're looking at a gaming industry worth about $200 billion per year.
Yo.
It is a massive, massive industry.
Is that just mobile alone?
Volgens Twitter.
Oh man,
Twitter.
I'm really having a great time in here.
Taking a side-on-side conversation of digital addiction. Was Dakindo with My Healer. And, oh man, it's really been great. But you know how it goes. Everything that's great has to come to an end at some point. Everything has a start and has an end. We started at 4. We've come to an end as I officially hand over to Gerard Daisel for the sports show, as well as Sanette Daisel on the news desk at 6 o'clock. So let's give it a name, call it a day until Friday from 4 till 6 o'clock. God bless.
We are here 24 hours a day with the message of hope, faith and love on 657 AM.
Do you need prayer? WhatsApp your name and your prayer request to 082-657-2729, and our care center will gladly contact you to pray for you.
Tune in to Radio Pulpit on 657 AM for reliable Christian talk radio at its best. Find your daily dose of Christ-centered motivation and encouragement on Radio Pulpit 657. Download our app now. Tune in to radiopulpit.co.za or find us on DSTV Audio 882 and OpenView 607. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion for more than 40 years, brings a relevant moral alternative to 400,000 listeners in a variety of South African languages. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and download our podcasts today.
You and 657 AM and life, a winning team on the road to eternity.